All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is here, and it's always great to talk with Sandy. You know, Sandy, how do you, over and over and over, we beat the same drum about our society and where it's headed, and yet, you know, I'm going to be, and I'm around children a lot. I mean, I really am, and all I could think about is their future, right? You spoke earlier about, and you keep harping on baby boomers, and that baby boomers, how selfish we've been, how selfish we are. And I don't know if it's not so much that we aren't willing to sacrifice, or is that what it is? We aren't willing to sacrifice. We're towards, as I always tell people, we've got more years behind us than we do ahead of us. And so when you come to that place in your life, we should be able to understand the life cycle more, right? And so we shouldn't need as much because we understand the life cycle.
Well, we ought to, in the grand prioritization of things, we ought to, like every grandparent would sacrifice themselves literally for their grandchild. Mm-hmm. And so if we're triaging money and how it gets spent, then we ought to triage it in favor of the young rather than the old. But that doesn't mean that we ought to drive the old to early extinction. But I just think that the American political debate suffers from not talking about priorities. We talk about one thing at a time. If we're having a debate about defense expenditure, we talk about how much we should spend and what we should spend it on. But we don't talk about it in the context of how much should we spend if the amount we spend limits the amount we can spend on childcare, on health care, on the people. I mean, are these things mutually exclusive? Well, of course they are, because, you know, Keynesians all believe that the government can make money, but there's a limit to how much money we can make, and the both parties seem to recognize or seem to believe that there's an open checkbook for military expenditures, and then everything else has to get evaluated against a triage of can we afford it. Well, we ought to put all those things into the same bucket, including military expenditures, which takes half of our discretionary expenditures, and we ought to start evaluating it in the context of why is it important, how important is it, how does it compare to child daycare, how does it compare to child health care.
But Sandy, we've seen that Joe Biden, who stepped into the office and started talking about the issues you just brought up.
Well, but they weren't they weren't done in comparison to defense, okay?
No, that's correct.
Okay, so if we, and not only that, but, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? And he and the Republicans together, one of the only bipartisan things they've done is immediately step up to the bar and agree to spend $53 billion, and that's just the beginning on an adventure in Ukraine. And, you know, that adventure is explained to us in a way that pokes our patriotism and our pride, but really, that's because that's the way it was presented to us. That same opportunity could have been presented to us about Georgia, when the very same things were happening to the country of Georgia, which is adjacent to Ukraine, as is happening in Ukraine now, but we didn't feel compelled to do that in just the same way. And that's because it didn't really matter to us enough to spend the kind of money and national treasure and attention on it. And That's the case with all of our foreign affairs, really, is how much real interest do we have and how much money should we spend? And of course, in retrospect, I'm sure that historians as well as economists will scratch their head about the fact that we apparently have spent $1 trillion in Afghanistan.
You know, Sandy, Ukraine, the increase in the Russian military's attacks different cities, it's really starting to get the imbalance between the two sides is really starting to show even more as Russia has ramping up these assaults and these attacks, and there isn't going to be any pushing back to the degree that you know Ukraine can see a light at the end of the tunnel. Russia has ramped up these attacks and these assaults in these cities and made threats of real carnage and real damage. They've actually been holding back, and they're about to increase it even to a higher level.
Well, I mean, part of the problem with a proxy war of the sort that this is, where we provide armaments but not troops, and where the warfare has to be limited in certain respects, with respect to, for instance, air cover, and because we don't really have the national interest in Ukraine that would drive us to take all the risks that would be involved with participating in the war. So what we're doing now is, I suppose, in a way, satisfying the interest of those who make weapons, and we're also satisfying Ukraine's drive to get better weapons to better defend itself. But ultimately, better weaponry is only going to prolong a conflict in which there is an absolute probability of what the outcome will be. And the inhumanity is essentially egging someone on to participate in a fight with a much bigger guy that they're going to lose to.
And the longer this goes on, we gave those rockets to Ukraine, and Ukraine has been hitting back the Russian military. And so inside of Ukraine and the Russian, and now Putin is saying, okay, is that what you're going to do? Now we're really going to show you something, and they've been kind of holding back, right? I mean, for what they could really do.
Well, I mean, that language sounds a lot like shock and awe. That's the language we used before we invaded Iraq. And that's the style of warfare that we deployed when we went to Iraq, which was extreme and brutal. And I suppose that's a little bit about what Putin is now threatening in Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine hasn't gone, I'm sure, the way Putin had hoped it would go. And war was the last thing, I think, that he should have initiated. I think there was a negotiating outcome. But that all depends on whether Ukraine was actually willing to negotiate or whether we'd given them so much Dutch courage with our tantalizing them about NATO and providing them with weaponry and a promise of weaponry that maybe they weren't negotiating when they were surrounded by troops and bought this outcome. And then in fact, maybe we helped buy the outcome. But this is like the gladiator fights. The gladiators would fight, and they were going to die unless the emperor would put his thumb up and save them, right?
Right.
And unfortunately, in this circumstance, we've told Ukraine our thumbs are tied. We aren't going to put our thumb up. So we're going to provide you with better weapons to fight the lions or the whatever it is that you're going to be forced to fight here. But ultimately, there's no thumbs up to end this thing.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be right back.